This is Mark Sobel, U.S. Chair, OMFIF. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Andy Rothman, investment strategist for Matthews Asia. Andy is recognized worldwide as a leading China expert at Matthews Asia. He is principally responsible for developing research on China. Andy and I discussed the coronavirus and its impact on China in an OMFIF podcast on February 25th, which you can find on the OMFIF webpage. Today's podcast is an update. Welcome back, Andy. So what a difference 1 month makes. A month ago, Wuhan and China were the epicenter of the coronavirus. A month later, one reads about a global pandemic, but it appears that the China coronavirus crisis is somewhat in the rearview mirror. You had suggested in our last podcast that by late March, the worst of it might be over in China. It appears you were right. So let's break our discussion down into health and then economic questions. Starting on health, what happened over the last month on the health side in China? What do the data show? Are new cases ebbing? How did China deal with the virus?
Yeah, that's a great place to start because obviously fighting the virus is the most important thing right now, even for the economic perspective. 3 weeks ago, 99% of the global cases of COVID-19 were in China. Now only 37% of the global cases are in China. Let me give you another way to look at it. In the 5 days through March 18th, on average in China, there were only 21 new cases a day. In the 5 days through February 18th, a month earlier, on average, there were over 2,000 cases a day. In fact, yesterday, we're now speaking on the 19th of March, yesterday in China, there were only 34 total cases across the whole country, zero in Hubei province, where the outbreak originally took place. And all of the 34 cases in China were imported cases. None of them were locally transmitted. It was people coming back from overseas. So, yeah, an amazing change. Now you've got 16 countries around the world with over 1,000 cases each. 12 of those 16, in fact, are in Europe. You also asked about lessons that can be learned. You know, I think looking at the clinical experience in China leaves me feeling a lot less depressed about the situation in the U.S. and Europe and the rest of the world than I might be otherwise, because China was able to beat this back. And I think that the measures that the Chinese government took and that the Chinese people participated in are not something that is exclusive to an authoritarian one-party regime, because we've seen similar progress in South Korea, Singapore as well. And, you know, if you look at what the epidemiologists are telling us, the key was not the dramatic lockdown that we're all familiar with that happened in Wuhan and just a few other cities. Most of the rest of the country was experiencing more of something akin to the social distancing that we're seeing in the San Francisco Bay Area, where I am right now, where basically all offices are shut down. I'm looking out my window at the Bay Bridge. There's no traffic on it at all. So everybody can do this. And then the other thing that was important in China was testing, massive amounts of testing. This is really important, and it's a place where a lot of other countries are lagging behind, because if you test, you can find out who's sick, you can isolate them and cut down the transmission rate, and you can also start treating them early on. And unfortunately, most countries have done a really poor job of getting testing ramped up.
Yes, and absent testing, we have a very poor handle on the actual number of cases involved.
I would say that given the low number of testing we're seeing right now and what we've already seen in the U.S. and Europe, the pattern that we saw in Asia where the number of cases tended to roughly double every 5 to 6 days is what we're seeing now in the rest of the world. And part of that is, as time goes by, more people are testing, getting tested. But this is almost certain to get significantly worse in the rest of the world before it gets better.
I think that's absolutely right. And there are a lot of charts that are put out daily on the growth in virus cases, and they certainly confirm what you just said. Let's turn to the economy. For the last 2 months of this year, it seems the Chinese economy was largely shut down. However, in March, it appears to be that China is witnessing a process by which it's getting back on its feet. I've seen estimates of around a 20% or even 40% or 50% drop in Q1 GDP on an annualized basis. But if business returns to anything approaching normal, there should be a massive rebound in activity in the second and third quarters, with much pent-up demand being met. So is that how you see it? Is China getting back to normal? Do you have predictions or views on GDP or other economic variables and how they'll behave in Q2 and over the course of the year?
Sure. I'm happy to share predictions on a bunch of things, but not the GDP growth rate. Because, you know, I've tended for many years to view the GDP growth rate as one of the least accurate statistics in China and the least important for investors. So I'm focused on a lot of other things rather than that. But
well, absolutely. And I should have learned from your first podcast where you made that point. So you're being totally consistent.
Okay. So let's start by looking at how dismal the numbers were in the first 2 months of this year. And this was just published last weekend. Retail sales in real terms down 24% year over year for January and February. And they combine the two because of the floating nature of the Lunar New Year holiday. Industrial value added down 14% year over year. Electricity generation down 8%. Fixed asset investment down 25%. Dismal, right? But we knew that was the case. And in fact, some of these numbers are even worse than than analysts were expecting, which is good. First of all, we knew it was going to be bad, but it's good because it reflects two things. One, the Chinese government was really focused on dealing with the virus, not worrying about the economic numbers. And two, there doesn't seem to be any sign that they've been fudging the numbers to make them look prettier. They're ugly. And then in terms of where things are going to go next, China's getting back to work now. We can see this from some statistics that we have. We don't have a lot of kind of short-term numbers, but we can see that, for example, coal use at some of the larger power plants has been recovering. It's still now about 25-30% below where it should be, but it's been getting back up. The number of migrant workers, these are the people from rural areas who have jobs in manufacturing and services in the major cities, 70-80% of them are back in the cities where their jobs are. Now, not all of them are back at work because some of them are still self-quarantining because cities are trying to keep this in check. But the process of moving back towards normal is there. I'm getting regular photos and videos from friends in China on WeChat, and you can see that traffic on the streets and in the subways and in the shopping malls is starting to pick back up again. So I don't think we're going to see the kind of V-shaped recovery that we saw after SARS was brought under control in 2003, because this COVID-19 outbreak and this virus is a similar coronavirus to SARS, but it's been much more widespread and more lethal, more global. So I think we're more likely to see a U-shaped recovery over the coming couple of months.
Thank you for that. So how are the Chinese markets responding? I saw that stocks had come back in February and early March, but they seem to be sliding in the last few days. But the stock market in China seems to be holding up better than in the Western markets. I'm always curious about whether they're buying stocks for their national champions, I think they call them. The RMB has been broadly stable, and that fits a pattern I've seen over time where during the Asia crisis and the global financial crisis, the authorities opted for stability. Broadly speaking, 10-year bond is down about 50 basis points when I last looked. Any comments on Chinese markets over the recent past and currently?
Yeah, one of the interesting things to me is that Chinese investors don't seem to have panicked nearly as much as investors, say, here in the United States. So as of last night, the S&P was down about 26%, but the Shanghai Index was down only, in quotes, 11%. And a fair amount of that's come recently, I think, just in response to what's happened here in the U.S. And I think part of that is that Chinese people and investors as well may have more confidence in their government's ability to put together and quickly and effectively implement a stimulus package. China has some benefits of being a one-party authoritarian regime. They don't have to negotiate with an opposition party. And there's also the experience from a decade ago during the global financial crisis of China quickly and effectively putting in place what's really the largest Keynesian stimulus since Keynes. So that's a positive. Plus, going into this, before the coronavirus arrived, the Chinese economy was in pretty healthy shape at the end of last year.
All true. So that's very helpful. I guess one of the other interesting facets of the current crisis is that the uncertainties And it seems that China is beginning to get past the uncertainties of the crisis, whereas, as we were discussing earlier, in the U.S. and other places in Europe, we're still looking at a ratcheting up of the numbers and the cases, and we're working on testing, which heightens uncertainties, which is bad for investors. That's a perfect segue into economic policies. The Chinese fiscal and monetary authorities are responding to the crisis, of course, and firms and businesses are facing shutdowns, lost liquidity. They're going to have problems repaying loans and workers. China's economy is different than major economies, but some of these problems are going to be faced by all of us. So what kind of fiscal and monetary measures has China taken to deal with the virus? Any sense of what's working and what isn't? Any lessons for us in the West? And then maybe one other thing that you just alluded to. In 08 and 09, there was a massive stimulus. Much of that was through credit expansion, but that built up a lot of leverage in the Chinese economy, which is a major concern of the authorities. So they seem to be more cautious now about using stimulus than in the past, notwithstanding the virus crisis, it seems to me, but perhaps you could educate us on all that.
I think I'll start with some of the issues that the Chinese have to deal with in their economic side are very similar to what we have to deal with in the United States and the rest of the world, which is that the engine of growth in China and the U.S. are small businesses. And small businesses are especially vulnerable to having their doors locked for a couple, 3 months, because they probably don't have a lot of savings and they don't have great access, if any, access to credit. And both economies, the U.S. and China, are very similar in that way. A lot of people probably don't realize that small businesses that nobody's ever heard of are really so important in the United States. According to U.S. Census data, 3/4 of American companies don't have a payroll. They're so small. Only 2% of U.S. firms have more than 100 employees. And it's pretty similar in China. So how do you help those? We can see policymakers in Washington struggling with this right now. And in China, I think they've already begun to get a handle on this. So for example, the Chinese government has already waived temporarily collection of a lot of taxes and fees from companies. So everything from Social Security payments to Housing Provident Fund and health insurance. And that's going to help give people more time, because the critical issue in China and then in the U.S., I think, also will be business is going to come back. You know, this is not a structural supply or demand crisis or a financial system structural problem. It's, can these firms survive long enough without any cash coming in to pay their employees, pay their rent, build up inventory again, so that when the virus is brought under control and life gets back to normal, they're there to get back into business again. It's far from guaranteed that the Chinese policymakers are going to be successful in this, but I'm feeling pretty optimistic that they're heading in the right direction. And they have a lot of dry powder because they really haven't wheeled out the big stimulus guns like they did in 2008-2009. I think you're right that the experience of still having to pay for that 10 years later has made them cautious. And so my impression is that the Chinese government is saying, let's wait. We'll do some things like taxes and fee cuts that I just described, but let's wait and see if there will be enough of an organic recovery so that we don't have to implement a giant stimulus. That said, they do have dry powder. Interest rates there are higher than they are in much of the rest of the world. Maybe more importantly for China, credit growth outstanding is, by Chinese standards, running at a fairly modest pace, around 11% year over year. So they've got room for a very, very large credit stimulus, which they could use to bring forward infrastructure construction to soak up unemployment. All those things are out there, but I think they're going to be cautious and wait to see what they need.
Well, thank you for that. Well, let's just wrap up, but let's talk about some risks. Now, I've read about two. I'm sure you've heard many more. One is that the virus, even if it's behind China, there could always be people coming back to China. The virus could be reimported, so to speak, and that could set back the economy again. And then the other thing is that given that the global economy is going into a deep slump, now that China is able to ratchet production back up, there won't be anywhere to export to for a good while. So And what risks are you thinking about, and how seriously do you take these?
Yeah, they're all serious. Maybe let's start in order of which of seriousness, at least in my view. For me, the most important one is the virus one, because if you don't have the virus under control, then you can't do anything about the economics. And you're right about the global impact. So as I mentioned earlier, in China yesterday, and we're speaking on the 19th, yesterday, 34 total cases, all of which were imported from other countries. We can see similar things happening in Hong Kong and Singapore, where they had really wrestled the virus under control. But yesterday, 25 new cases in Hong Kong, 47 in Singapore, a bounce back up. And I don't have the numbers for imports there, but I'm guessing that may have been because people were coming back with it. So that's going to be the most important thing, is to keep the virus under control. The second most important risk in China, I think, is going to be the issue of keeping those small businesses alive so they have time to recover, that we already talked about. As far as the global recession impact, that one's lower down on my list, because China has moved away from being an export-led economy to a domestic demand-driven economy. Last year was the eighth consecutive year in which the tertiary part of GDP was larger than the secondary part. Last year, about 60% of GDP growth came from consumption. And exports play a much, much smaller role in the economy than they did just a decade ago. In the couple of years before the global financial crisis, net exports, the value of a country's exports minus their imports, were contributing about 13% of China's GDP growth each year. In the last 5 years, that contribution from net exports to GDP growth in China has been zero. Now, this isn't to say that there's a zero impact of a global recession on China. There's definitely an impact. But, you know, for example, gross export value is equal to about 17% of GDP in China. But I would say it's going to be a modest impact, because this is really a domestic demand-driven economy.
Well, thank you for that. It will be very interesting to continue watching what happens in China. And I have a feeling it's going to be even more worrisome, and watching what happens in the rest of the world. I thank you for joining us today and sharing your wonderful and lucid insights with the OMFIF audience. Thank you, Andy Rothman.